1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. President-elect Trump takes office in January. He'll have a Republican majority in both the Senate and the House.
It means that Mike Johnson can't really lose anyone on any kind of high-stake vote. It also means that people can't be sick. There are members who can't miss their planes. There can't be travel issues. And that's going to be a very serious point of conflict, potentially, between Mike Johnson and some of the hardliners in his party.
ABC's Jay O'Brien. There were plenty of post-Thanksgiving shoppers inside Little Rock's Park Plaza Mall when the gunfire rang out. Three people shot. Authorities say the wounds are not considered life-threatening. Unclear if there's anyone in custody. Adobe Analytics says Americans have spent almost $8 billion online since Thanksgiving Day, and those sales are expected to top out at around $11 billion, which would be an e-commerce record. The coldest air of the season yet pouring into the Midwest, South, Mid-Atlantic, and Northeast United States. This is ABC News. Hamas leaders know they can't beat Israel militarily, so continuing terror attacks.
Hamas claiming responsibility for a shooting in the West Bank that injured 9 Israelis. The Palestinian militant, a member of Hamas, opening fire on a crowded public bus. He was killed at the scene. The attack comes as Hamas faces near defeat in Gaza after more than a year of war with Israel.
ABC's Jordana Miller in Jerusalem. We're hearing from some of the people who were on a Delta Airlines New York to Paris flight with a stowaway. Woman got on the plane with no ticket, no boarding pass, and no explanation.
Rob Jackson was on board.
She must have been hiding in one of the lavatories when we departed from JFK. And then during the flight, she was seen moving from one lavatory to another, never actually going to a passenger seat.
That woman was detained upon landing. Delta is now conducting a full investigation.
ABC's Trevor Ault. I'm Richard Cantu, ABC News.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Badgers lose to Minnesota. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers lost to Minnesota at Camp Randall 24-7. The Gophers win the Paul Bunyan Axe. The Badgers finish with a losing record of 5-7, ending their streak of 22 years of going to a bowl game. Head coach Luke Fickell on his seniors' final game at Wisconsin.
I feel bad for them. I apologize for not putting us in position to put them guys out of here and send them guys out of here the way they should be sent out for all that they've done for us. That's not what they deserve.
NFL, the Packers getting ready to play the Lions next after beating the Dolphins last night 30-17. Matt LaFleur says the offensive line needs to improve their blocking for running back Josh Jacobs.
We got a lot of room for improvement there, and they know it, but we got to be better. Sometimes we got to have better play calls. Sometimes we got to have better execution.
The Chicago Bears fired their head coach Matt Eberflus after they lost to the Lions yesterday, failing to use a timeout at the end of the game. Assistant Thomas Brown named interim head coach. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. It's been a long road for the live-action version of Snow White, but there is now a release date in sight. The Disney flick has been in development since 2016 and was supposed to be released in 2024. Greta Gerwig wrote the script for the film, which stars Rachel Zegler and Gal Gadot. Snow White will hit theaters March 21st of 2025. Hollywood is full of crazy stories, and actor Josh Brolin has a doozy he shared in his new memoir, From Under the Truck. Brolin tells the story of when he met acting legend Marlon Brando. Brolin attended a dinner at his stepmother Barbara Streisand's house, along with John Travolta and Kelly Preston. Brolin recalled that Brando showed up with a bleeding leg because he stopped to pull someone from a mudslide on the way to the party. Travolta, a well-known Scientologist, noticed and told Brando he had just gotten to the next level as a Scientologist and said he could heal him. Brolin recalled watching Danny Zuko heal the Godfather, one of the most surreal of his life. It was surreal just reading that. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly to mostly cloudy tonight and cold with lows close to 10. And a little more sunshine as we look here into your Saturday afternoon. Highs into the low 20s. And mostly sunny for Sunday, high temps warm up into the mid-20s. Currently, it's 17 degrees.
Dom Selvia.
Just P.S., Dom's producer here. Next time, Dom will be back live for all the political talk you missed. No more looking at how the sausage gets made, except for the government. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This ain't Texas. Woo! Ain't no hold'em. Hey! So lay your cards down, 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 down. So park your Lexus.
Welcome back. It is hour number two of the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Jimmy Kuska, filling in for Maggie, who will be back on Monday. Yes, hour number two. Hour number one, we covered everything from all the deadlines for the spring election, which is coming up already here in a few months, as well as talked a little football because the Packers won last night. Talked a little bit about the Badgers as well. Also covered Small Business Saturday, which is tomorrow already on the show. We'll have all of that in the podcast, which will be available after this show. This hour, coming up in a half hour, we're going to talk school referendums in the state of Wisconsin. We'll do that coming up at about 3:30. But right now, boy, it is holiday season, right? Everybody's ready for it. The trees are up. The lights are on. We're ready to go. I'm joined right now by Logan Rogge from Travel Wisconsin. We've got a whole bunch of things to talk about because Wisconsin is an awesome state and there's a lot to do this time of year. I don't care, you know, cold and snow for some people, whatever. But for me, this is prime time for me, being a northern Wisconsin native. And there's so much to do in Wisconsin. Logan, first of all, thank you for joining me to talk about something very near and dear to me. And that's stuff to do in Wisconsin.
Well, thanks for having me, Jimmy. I'm excited to be on, and you are exactly right. This is the start of a really exciting season in Wisconsin. You know, whether you're looking for those snow adventures, those are going to be coming up really quickly, but it's also the holiday season, and there's a ton of different activities and events to go check out. So very excited to share some ideas today.
Well, I'm excited to have you, and I want to start. You mentioned the word snow, and this was something that we've had the release for this already. We get to see the cool map, but the Wisconsin Snow Report, and this is such a great tool for snowmobile enthusiasts like myself who need just kind of a shorthand way to find trail status in whatever county I happen to be in, whether I'm back home up north or I'm home in southwestern Wisconsin. But it includes more than just trail reports. There's a whole lot that goes into the snow report beyond that. Can you tell us a little bit about this tool and even how people can get to it?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Jimmy. The Wisconsin Snow Report, it is actually one of Travel Wisconsin's most popular resources throughout the entire year. For folks who haven't used it before, it is a interactive map that details the snow conditions for skiing and snowboarding, cross-country skiing, and snowmobiling all across the state. It's really this fantastic resource to learn these sort of detailed information, like how many ski runs are open at a ski hill, whether cross-country trails have lights, you know, where to go snowmobiling across the state. And with winter gearing up, a lot of ski hills, they're making their own snow right now. You're just going to see more and more destinations popping up on this map, you know, where you can discover winter fun. But it's more than just learning about, you know, what the conditions are. It's really this full-fledged planning resource So you can click a destination on the map and say it's a snowmobile trail or a ski hill, and you're going to find ideas for nearby restaurants to eat at, places you can spend the night, events that are happening in the area, and all these other ideas to just sort of round out that winter getaway. And you can check that out at travelwisconsin.com/snowreport.
Logan, one of the nice things about that, and I speak to this as someone who's worked in news media for a long time, is that you can go right to the snow reports, right? And the source for those reports is right there. It's linked and ready to go. So if you want to maybe find out if there's anything else to know about the trail conditions that aren't just listed on the map, maybe there's something, you got to dive a little deeper, right, and find out a little bit more. All that's right there in one spot.
Yeah, we are so fortunate. We partner with more than 100 volunteer reporters all across the state. And these folks, they're providing that firsthand knowledge. They're out there on the trails experiencing it. They know how well it's groomed, what the snow depth is, and all this critical information that you need to plan that winter getaway. And it's really just this succinct resource to share that sort of knowledge with folks.
Talking to Logan Rogge from Travel Wisconsin, and just one final thought on the snow report. One of the neat things too, in addition to just having a great visual to all the things that are happening, but as you mentioned, there's more information for people who, might be planning a trip or a getaway or finding ways to get to those things. But I think too, it's a very accessible tool as well. There's a lot of different ways that people can, get that data in just one spot, right? It's not just, a map of pretty colors, but, there's very detailed things that go with it. And as you mentioned, there's ways to dive a little deeper and find out more what's going on in those areas.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because we like to make improvements and enhancements each season to the snow report to just kind of respond to the way travelers plan. And we recently made some improvements that folks can sort by the best conditions first. So say you're looking for that super fresh powder, you can sort that way. But you can also filter these outdoor destinations by amenities offered. So if you're, just picking up skiing, you can find all the ski hills that offer a ski school and those sorts of amenities. So it's really there to just help that traveler plan that trip.
Talking to Logan Rogge from Travel Wisconsin. Well, let's talk about some of the cool things that happen around Wisconsin. And I'll start with this because, again, I'm a Northwestern Wisconsin native, and I have a lot of memories of going to Irvin Park in Chippewa Falls. I actually brought my own kids who, don't get up to the Chippewa Valley as much these days, but brought my own kids to see it, and they were blown away by just how cool it was to, you go through this entire park and there's just lights like every which way you look. It's a good half hour that you're in there and you still don't see everything in one trip. There's a lot of cities across Wisconsin that take a lot of pride in the lights they put together. And in a lot of cases, these are done largely by volunteers and organizations, but it seems like we've got just a wide assortment of ways for people to take in some incredible holiday lights displays across the state.
I would 100% agree. I mean, these are wonderful volunteer-led displays of fantastic pops of color, a ton of big ones to check out. One that has really been delighting folks for 3 decades is in La Crosse. That is the La Crosse Rotary Lights. And I tell you, this is a trip-worthy destination this holiday season. They have more than 3 million lights that are casting a glow over the entire park. Like, this is, right on the Mississippi River. You can just see these lights reflecting off of it. And it's really cool. You can either walk through the park on foot and kind of go leisurely about it and stroll through the display, or, say you have kids and you want to stay toasty in the car, you can drive through the park. On some select nights, they even run carriage rides through Riverside Park to take in the lights that way. But it's more than just the lights on display. It's fun throughout the entire park. When the weather allows, they have ice rinks, they have these bonfires you can roast s'mores over. They even have Santa and a few of his reindeers you can visit. And the La Crosse Rotary Lights, they go on display starting Friday, November 29th, and it runs through New Year's Eve.
Well, a lot of these, Logan, a lot of these displays are popping up post-Thanksgiving, right? So we see a lot of these coming through. You mentioned La Crosse. I know, my part of the state, there's a couple of great displays in southwestern Wisconsin. But I know in some of the larger cities, especially in eastern Wisconsin, I mean, these things, you know, you expect a lot of people to arrive at them, but a lot of these things get going right away here after Thanksgiving, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, in Oshkosh, they have their Celebration of Lights, and that starts this Friday, November 29th. That is a drive-through display at the EAA grounds, and it features hundreds of thousand light bulbs. You know, they have these decorative scenes, animated displays, and so much more. And then up there in northeastern Wisconsin, there is Green Bay's Garden of Lights. So this is an event that takes over the Green Bay Botanical Garden, and it's these fantastical light displays that are depicting animals and nature. There's this one really impressive one that's known as the Caterpillar. It's a tunnel of color to walk under. You know, other displays, they're so stunning. They almost look like these shining pieces of artwork. So the Garden of Lights, that is open on weekends and select weekdays from Friday, November 29th through December 30th. So really, you got a lot of options throughout the state.
And to that point, I mean, it's not just, you know, the larger cities too. We've talked about some of the bigger, you know, places in Wisconsin, but even small towns have their own charm and their own displays in their parks. It's one of the neat experiences about whether you're snowmobiling or driving through the state is that pretty much any town you go through, there's going to be an area you can go to. There'll be a park, or, you know, sometimes it's a school led thing or a church led thing, but there's going to be some kind of display to go through. And I don't know if this is specifically Wisconsin charm, but I know that in Wisconsin, there's a lot of places that take in some great displays here.
That's exactly right. I think everyone, you know, knows that street in their community or that house in their community that really goes all out. And they look forward to it every single season. And you see that wherever you travel through the state. I think it's really just a sort of reflection of Wisconsin's spirited and celebratory nature. You know, we like to celebrate the season, whether, you know, it's Christmas or New Year's Eve or Memorial Day. You know, we just want to go all out and show our spirit.
Talking to Logan Rogge from Travel Wisconsin about all the cool things that the state has to offer. If you're getting out and about and checking out these things, you can find out a lot of information, a lot of different ways to enjoy the state in winter by going to travelwisconsin.com. Suck shopping a bit, right? Because now we're post Thanksgiving, we're thinking holidays, we're thinking, how can we get out there and find gifts for people that we care about, find experiences for people to enjoy what Wisconsin has to offer. One of the neat things about the state is that there's a lot of European influence in a lot of communities. I know in this part of the state, of course, people automatically think about New Glarus, for example, which has a lot of Swiss-style housing and a lot of cool things. It's more than just a brewery. The downtown area is actually pretty awesome. But there's a lot of European-inspired events that happen as well here throughout the holidays, right, Logan?
That's exactly right. In communities of all sizes, you're actually going to find these European-style holiday markets that are cropping up. Some have been around for decades, others are new, but it's really embracing kind of sort of the traditions of how the season has been celebrated in Europe and bringing it here to Wisconsin. And like I said, these are in communities of all sizes. So in Sparta, they hold this really popular Chris Kindle market. It's one of the best outdoor Christmas markets in Wisconsin, and they're actually celebrating 10 years of it this year. It's replicating one of those traditional German-style markets, and they're full of these local artisans. You know, they're selling handmade gifts at 33 different huts. They've got these authentic German flavors like Glühwein. It's a traditional mulled wine if you had it, or Bavarian pretzel, and that Sparta Chris Kindle Market. It opens Fridays and Saturdays for 4 weeks, beginning November 29th. Definitely a really good one to check out.
Talking to Logan Rogge from Travel Wisconsin. Logan, do you have time to stick around for one more quick segment?
Yeah, I do.
All right, Logan Rogge will join us on the other side of the break. So we'll do that right now. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. I'm Jimmy Cuska, the sports director here at Civic Media. We'll have a whole bunch more for you coming up right after this with Logan Rogge of Travel Wisconsin.
Come take it to the floor now. And I'll be damned if I cannot dance with you. Baby, pour that sugar and liquor on me too.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
as a network, we're called Civic Media because a big part of it is we want to start modeling how civic discourse really should happen and being respectful of each other's opinions, even if you disagree, you know, like they should be given a platform.
If Rocker and I can get along, right. We can all get along.
I know, exactly.
Right, Rocker?
Yeah, that's right, Jimmy.
Well, you do have a wall in between the two of you, so
glass.
It's like...
It's only glass, though. Tear down the walls. Listen to Max Inc. Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project. We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going
yes.
to get yes. them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Civic Media, it's the Maggie Dawn Show, and I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in today as we work our way through this Black Friday post-Thanksgiving here on the Civic Media Network. Coming up in about 10 minutes, going to talk to Mark Sommerhauser of the Wisconsin Policy Forum on the results of the school referendums around the state and the impact of that going forward, especially as it applies to the legislative biennial budget, which, well, we're having the listening sessions already begin next week with Governor Evers. So that's already heading your way. If you miss any of the show, you can find the podcast at civicmedia.us. Already on the show, I've covered football, of course, I'm the sports director. Why wouldn't we cover football? Also on the show, I've talked a bit about Small Business Saturday, which is tomorrow, and a little bit about getting on those spring election ballots. But right now, we are talking Wisconsin holiday attractions and events. I'm joined once again by Logan Rogge from Travel Wisconsin, gracious enough to stick around for another segment here. Logan, we were talking about some of the European-style Christmas markets in Wisconsin, and there are, we talked about the European influence, not only in winter, but in a lot of holidays in Wisconsin, but there are still some great Christmas markets to talk about here. So let's finish the thought on that and talk about some of the ones happening here across eastern Wisconsin.
So along the Mississippi River in western Wisconsin, you're going to discover this European-style holiday market that honestly makes you feel like you're in Europe too. This is at Villa Bellezza Winery, and they host a popular outdoor and indoor market. And the winery, it's actually designed to replicate the look of an Italian village. So in their center courtyard, which they call their piazza, you're going to stroll past these vendors that are selling locally produced goods while sipping on some of that locally produced wine. It's really this sort of experiential, memorable experience. That's at Villa Bellezza Winery, and they're hosting it Saturdays and Sundays through December 22nd. But really, you know, throughout Wisconsin, you're finding these sort of markets. There's the Chris Kindle Market on Broadway in Green Bay. There's the Old World Christmas Market at the Ostoff Resort. So great options to support local artisans and have fun while you're doing that holiday shopping.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because it's not just about, you know, giving stuff to people, right? Wisconsin has so much to offer beyond just stuff. There are some great experiences to be had in Wisconsin all times of the year, but especially here in the winter. But there are some ideas for people who are looking to you know, maybe you have a family member who hasn't been back to Wisconsin in a bit. Maybe you have a friend coming to the state. What are some things people can do to get to help people get out and experience what this great state has to offer?
So some of the most rewarding gifts are kind of those intangibles. It's memories. Electronics, they can become outdated. Clothes can go out of fashion. But traveling, whether it's with friends or family or by yourself, it's this really enriching and unforgettable experience to gift. And there's a ton of different ways you can think about this, whether you have out-of-state folks visiting or you want to encourage someone to experience Wisconsin more. You know, you can book a guest getaway to a destination your gift receiver hasn't visited yet. Find those local only in Wisconsin activities to add to your itinerary. And some of those gifts, they can really give back throughout the entire year. One great idea is purchasing a state park admission sticker for those outdoor lovers in your life. You know, you're going to provide them with 12 months of access to all the state parks and state forests. And next year actually marks the 125th anniversary of the state park system too. So visitors, they can expect a wide array of events at all the state parks that are celebrating this important milestone, really making that vehicle admission sticker an even greater gift.
And speaking of that, you know, the change to that too is it's no longer like a January to December. Now it's a rolling 12-month sticker. So when you gift it, you actually get the full 12 months of it now, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you really get the all 12 months of value out of it. So that is a top of my list for like that outdoor lover in your life. But maybe there's someone you know who really loves history. A great option for them is an annual membership to the Wisconsin Historical Society. So history buffs will get free access to 12 historic sites and museums that are spread throughout the state, in addition to other benefits. I've been able to visit a few of these sites. They're wonderful. I went to Villa Louie in Prairie du Chien, and that is so fun. I would highly recommend visiting that place. But the Historical Society, they make it easy for you. They provide an option on their website to directly gift a membership. They know this is, you know, a popular option, so certainly one worth considering.
Yeah, and it is great that you mentioned some of the attractions, you know, especially in the more rural parts of the state where, you know, people think of Wisconsin sometimes and they think of the big cities, but there's a lot of charm to be had and a lot of cool things to visit. The state parks, obviously, but a lot of these historic attractions around the state certainly bring people in. Final thought, Logan, before we wrap this thing up. We've talked about a lot of things, but there is one place people can go, right, to find out all the information they need on things to do in Wisconsin.
Yeah, whatever you're interested in, if it's, you know, holiday shopping or snow sports or ideas to gift travel and any sort of Wisconsin getaway, you can plan it at travelwisconsin.com.
Logan, I appreciate all of your time. It's so much fun to talk about Wisconsin. And, you know, there's nothing really more fun for me working in a business like radio where I can just talk about the state I like and about the cool things to do here. I mean, that's fun. So I appreciate all your time and all the work you guys do over there at Travel Wisconsin.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy. I appreciate the time.
It can be overwhelming sometimes when you think about all the stuff there is to do in Wisconsin. And I mean, when we talk about, we just had Logan Rogge on for almost a full half hour, right? So we had him on for like a half an hour, and we were just scratching the surface of all the things that are going on in the holiday season around Wisconsin. I mean, just barely scratching the surface of all the cool things that you can do. You can find a full list of events at travelwisconsin.com if you're looking for some inspiration on that getaway day. I know as someone with children, as somebody who likes to get out and do things in the winter, that it is a tremendous resource for just getting out there and enjoying what this great state has to offer. Big, big thanks to Logan Rogge from Travel Wisconsin for joining us right there. Going to shift gears a little bit in our next segment, going to talk school referendums with Mark Sommerhauser of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Yep, we are talking school referendums because we just had a record number of them pass this year, and this spring could bring a whole lot more to your ballot. So we're going to talk about that coming up here in just a few minutes. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Jimmy Cuska, the sports director here at Civic Media, and we'll have more coming up right after this here, listening here to the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media.
From the center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. President-elect Trump takes office in January. He'll have a Republican majority in both the Senate and the House.
It means that Mike Johnson can't really lose anyone on any kind of high-stake vote. It also means that people can't be sick. There are members who can't miss their planes. There can't be travel issues. And that's going to be a very serious point of conflict, potentially, between Mike Johnson and some of the hardliners in his party.
ABC's Jay O'Brien. There were plenty of post-Thanksgiving shoppers inside Little Rock's Park Plaza Mall when the gunfire rang out. Three people shot. Authorities say the wounds are not considered life-threatening. Unclear if there's anyone in custody. Adobe Analytics says Americans have spent almost $8 billion online since Thanksgiving Day, and those sales are expected to top out at around $11 billion, which would be an e-commerce record. The coldest air of the season yet pouring into the Midwest, South, Mid-Atlantic, and Northeast United States. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Badgers lose to Minnesota. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers lost to Minnesota at Camp Randall 24-7. The Gophers win the Paul Bunyan Axe. The Badgers finish with a losing record of 5-7, ending their streak of 22 years of going to a bowl game. Head coach Luke Fickell on his seniors' final game at Wisconsin.
I feel bad for them. I apologize for not putting us in position to put them guys out of here and send them guys out of here the way they should be sent out for all that they've done for us. That's not what they deserve.
NFL, the Packers getting ready to play the Lions next after beating the Dolphins last night 30-17. Matt LaFleur says the offensive line needs to improve their blocking for running back Josh Jacobs.
We got a lot of room for improvement there, and they know it, but we got to be better. Sometimes we got to have better play calls. Sometimes we got to have better execution.
The Chicago Bears fired their head coach Matt Eberflus after they lost to the Lions yesterday, failing to use a timeout at the end of the game. Assistant Thomas Brown named interim head coach. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Well, Glickin Weekend's box office haul turned out to be no match for that of Barbenheimer's, but it was still impressive and helped the holiday box office get off to a great start. As expected, Wicked landed in the top spot with a take of $114 million, more than doubling Gladiator 2's haul of $56 million at the gate. Gladiator 2, directed by Ridley Scott and starring Paul Mescal, Connie Nielsen, Denzel Washington, and Pedro Pascal, was never expected to be the top dog, as it was always Oppenheimer to Wicked's Barbie. Wicked slightly exceeded expectations with its box office haul, whereas Gladiator 2 came in just under its expectations. This is becoming a trend in Hollywood where two films coming out at the same time were not necessarily competing against each other, but help each other create a social media phenomenon. Landing in third place in week two of its release was Red One with $13 million. Rounding out the top five were Bonhoeffer, Pastor Spy Assassin, and the resilient Venom, The Last Dance, which came in fifth place with $4 million. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly to mostly cloudy tonight and cold with lows close to 10. And a little more sunshine as we look here into your Saturday afternoon. Highs into the low 20s. And mostly sunny for Sunday. High temps warm up into the mid-20s. Currently it's 17 degrees.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. An all-new live show back in the studio. Join us for a look back at the holiday weekend and prepare you for the week ahead.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Maggie Daunt Show on Civic Media. I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in for Maggie Daunt. Coming up in a half hour, it is the Dominic Salvia Show, and it'll be hosted by our producer today, Jess P.S., so stay tuned for that. I'm joined right now by Mark Sommerhauser. He's the Communications Director at Wisconsin Policy Forum, and we're going to talk a little bit more about school referendums in Wisconsin. And if you were a voter in Wisconsin, chances are in the past couple of years, you have seen a school referendum question on your ballot. In fact, we had over 100 of them here just in the fall. In fact, 139 total. So if you were a voter in Wisconsin, you have seen these on your ballots. Mark, I appreciate you joining us here today because I think this is a topic for a lot of people that can be really confusing. Like, what am I voting for? What am I voting on as far as school referendums go? But also just in the context of where things kind of stand with everything else happening in the state in terms of policy, in terms of pushes by legislators, I think school referendums are kind of a fascinating area because it affects so many people. Thank you for joining me today.
Good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Mark, well, let's start with this. The report that you that the Wisconsin Policy Forum put out shows that we had a record number of questions approved, and we also had a record amount approved in the fall election, and for the 2024 year, we had a record number. And I know there's a lot of ways we can go about this, but there's a lot of reasons for this, right? What are some of the factors and why we're seeing so many questions appear on ballots?
Yeah, so that's right. We did see a record number of these questions put to voters, who then in turn approved a record number of them in 2024. And you know, school finance is obviously a complicated topic, but there are a few factors that are kind of playing into this. You know, certainly inflation is a significant one. Over the past few years, you know, the same inflationary pressures that many of your listeners have felt in their household budgets are also affecting the budgets of school districts. There's been a lot of pressure to increase wages for teachers and other school district employees, and that is definitely one factor that's contributing. Certainly one factor that's not a new thing. It's something that's been ongoing for more than a decade now. The state imposes what's called revenue limits, which are a limit that each school district has on the amount of revenue they can take in from the combination of the money that they receive in state aid and the money that they levy in their local property tax levy. And those revenue limits have not been increasing at a pace to match inflation for more than a decade. And so there's a cumulative effect over a number of years when, you know, you've had year after year when those revenue limits have not kept pace with inflation. It has put more and more districts in a position where they feel compelled to put these referendums on the ballot. And you mentioned in your intro kind of what some people might feel like, what even am I voting on here? And just to be clear, you know, these referenda basically allow the school district to exceed that state-imposed revenue limit, to increase their property tax levy above what the state would otherwise be limiting them to do. So that, you know, those factors are definitely two of the biggest ones. Of course, there are other ones as well, but those are two of the biggest factors, I think, in terms of why we're seeing so many of these questions on the ballot.
We saw that 70% roughly passed here in the fall, which you know, seems like a good number compared to, you know, earlier elections this year. And of course, elections last year when, you know, we've, you know, for districts, you know, struggling to get it out of the 50% ranges for some of those elections. It seems like 70%. It felt kind of like a win, just kind of at its face. But when you look at historical data, it sure seems like, you know, for a presidential election, you know, 70% for the districts that passed it, of course, they feel pretty good. But 70% passage rate in a presidential election, how does that compare to past elections?
Well, I hope to kind of take a long-term view on this, because the answer is that that's a lower rate of passage than the most recent several, you know, major election years. By major, I mean like a presidential or a midterm election year. That's a lower rate. So the peak was kind of in 2018 when we saw almost 90% of these referenda get approved. But 2018 was definitely an outlier. That was the high point. And since that time, we've really seen a declining passage rate. But if you go back further in time, you know, into the aughts, into the 90s, 70% is still a pretty high approval. You know, in the 90s and the aughts, we were routinely seeing rates of approval for these referenda that were 50% or even lower. So, you know, the kind of long-term trend is we saw these approval rates really increase quite significantly in the 20-teens. And then they do in the 2020s, they do seem to have ticked back down a little bit, but are still relatively high compared to where they were 15 or 20 years ago.
Talking to Mark Sommerhauser, he's the communications director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and we're recapping a bit of the year in school referendum. You know, one piece of data that was shared in your report that I found really fascinating was and how it was tied to sort of the public sentiment towards public education, right? So there's data from the from Marquette University's law school poll and from, you know, just looking at the passage rates, it was really interesting just kind of seeing how those the trend lines, the arcs kind of went with each other in that. And I know that the public sentiment towards public education, it you know, it's like a lot of things. It kind of depends on, you know, what you vote for broadly. But I found it really fascinating that the referendum rate and the public sentiment as measured by the Marquette University Law School poll, it just seemed like the data points really strongly went with one another.
Yeah, it really tracks pretty well. And a lot of credit to Marquette Law School and Charles Franklin, who runs that poll. He fortunately asks a question on that poll that is very relevant to this discussion. And he's been, and even more helpfully, he's been asking it since 2013. So now we have more than a decade of these survey response data. We can kind of see how the public has felt about, you know, this question. And just so your listeners know that since 2013, the Marquette poll has asked Wisconsinites, which is more important to you, reducing property taxes or increasing spending on public schools, right? Which is essentially the question that voters are weighing in on when they vote on these referenda. And that number has gone up and down somewhat. You know, when he first was asking the question, that was not long after the Great Recession in 2013. So you had, you know, it was pretty close to 50-50 at that time. In the later 20-teens, we started to see a pretty solid majority of folks saying they actually favored increasing spending on public schools over reducing their property taxes. But we have seen in the last few years that start to flip around. And I think, again, you know, just another impact of inflation, I think, is got to be at least a part of what's going on there. Because as more households are feeling the squeeze of having to pay more for a lot of different things, it does seem like more people are saying, I would prefer to have the property tax cut over increasing funding for my local public school.
And Mark, that's a fascinating idea, because when you talk about school referendums, it sometimes isn't the only referendum on the ballot. And we've seen it, and we've seen it more frequently in recent years, that it's not just schools going to referendum, but it's school, or it's counties and it's cities and municipalities that are also seeking to go beyond the levy limit. Now, I know that the last budget and legislation has started to address some of this in terms of revenue sharing, but you know, when it comes to talking about school referendums, it's not in a vacuum if it's the only thing on the ballot. There are other ballot measures that have come up as well here in recent years, right?
That's correct. And in fact, you know, if for those of your listeners who are residents of the city of Madison, you know, they know that on their ballots here this November, they saw both a school district referendum and a city of Madison referendum on the same ballot to exceed the state imposed limits and be able to increase property taxes above what they otherwise would have been limited to. And that's still pretty unusual for voters in a community to see, or a school and a city referendum at the same time, but it is probably going to happen more now that we're seeing both very high rates of school districts going to these referenda, and now more and more, as you said, cities, villages, and counties, towns doing these referenda, which that used to be very unusual until fairly recently. It's still not nearly as common as the school district referenda, but again, it is becoming more common.
Mark, I want to ask just a bit, too, about last year's biennial budget and how that might have affected things for school districts. Because, you know, when you look at it on its face, that all this extra money, you know, goes into education, some of it to public education, some into vouchers. There were things like increasing, you know, the caps. There were things like increasing the per pupil aid. How do you think that, you know, generally affects maybe what happens in this next budget cycle, knowing that public education was such a hot topic in the last budget, and I think some legislators and maybe some members of the public feel like education was already addressed in the last budget cycle.
Yeah, so there was a significant provision in the most recent state budget, in the prior budget that was passed in 2021, the state of lawmakers did not increase revenue limits for school districts at all. They kept them flat. They did change course somewhat in the most recent budget here in 2023. They increased those revenue limits by $325 per pupil in both years of the biennium in 2024 and 2025. So that was a significant increase, but coming on the tails of 2 years in which there were no increases at all, some districts are in a position where they're saying, you know, those increases were just not enough for us to keep pace with inflation and some of the cost pressures that they're seeing, which, you know, to be clear, are always first and foremost about personnel. You know, that's always by far the biggest cost that school districts incur. It's just paying teachers, paying staff, paying administrators. And, you know, we have seen somewhat of a bidding war in some parts of the state for, you know, really highly qualified teachers. Because kind of separately from the issue of inflation, you know, we've seen a lot of teachers now retire out of the workforce. And what we're hearing from a lot of school districts in many parts of the state is there really is quite a shortage of qualified teachers that they were not necessarily seeing 10 years ago, but that due to really a wave of retirements and some other factors, there's quite a squeeze that a lot of school districts are facing to be able to hire enough, really highly qualified teachers.
I'm talking to Mark Sommerhausen. He is with the Wisconsin Policy Forum. And Mark, just a couple more questions on the topic, because, again, this is something that affects, I think, a lot of people when you talk about school funding. And it's going to be, you know, one of, if not the biggest topic that comes up in this next budget cycle. And I just want to start with the ask of the DPI and our education head here, our state superintendent, Dr. Jill Utterly, in the money that they are seeking. And a lot of the money is tied that in the ask to how schools are reimbursed for special education funding. And I think this is probably an area where, for a lot of people, maybe the math can be hard to understand sometimes, but essentially, you know, schools are reimbursed at a certain rate for special education costs. And the ask this year, a big portion of the billions-dollar ask is to increase that reimbursement rate for schools. Just from a policy perspective, you know, with the budget surplus and everything, it doesn't seem likely that all of the budget surplus is going to go to public education. But I'm curious about, what mechanisms or maybe the likelihood of something happening in that regard, just given that this continues to be a very important topic for legislators.
Yeah, so there's no question that's going to be one of the most significant parts of the state budget debate, as it always is. You know, state aid to school districts is the single biggest chunk of the state budget. So that's always a contentious topic. The state superintendent's proposal is certainly an ambitious proposal. She is proposing, as part of her budget request, that there would be a per pupil revenue limit increase of $425 per in each year of the next biennium. She's also looking at some other areas here where she wants to really significantly increase the rate at which the state reimburses school districts for special education costs. Right now, that reimbursement rate is quite low. It's just a little above 30%. She wants to increase that all the way up to 90%, which again is a really ambitious proposal. I think, you know, fair to say that under the current, you know, Republican majorities in the legislature, it's unlikely, very unlikely that they're just going to pass that request as is. A lot of the debate goes back to the fact that, you know, the state superintendent is saying, well, we have this very historically very large budget surplus, about a $4 billion budget surplus. She's saying, hey, you know, it's time for us to take some of that surplus and invest it in our public education system. You're going to see, of course, on the other side of this, a lot of lawmakers in the majority, they're going to be seeking to use that surplus for tax cuts. And so that's going to be a lot of the tension that's going to be happening in that budget debate. And of course, there's many other areas of the state budget as well that are going to be where you're going to have stakeholders that are going to be seeking funding increases as well. So that's part of the debate that's going to be had.
Mark, would you be willing to stick around for one more quick segment just to wrap up the topic?
We can stick around for just a little bit.
All right, Mark, we'll have Mark back on right after this. This is the Maggie Don Show on Civic Media.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it.
All right.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Don Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Don Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back. This is the Maggie Don Show on Civic Media. I'm Jimmy Cuska, the sports director here at Civic Media, filling in today. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Jess P.S. will be guest hosting the Dominic Salvia Show. Stay tuned for that. I'm once again rejoined by Mark Sommerhauser. He's the communications director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. And I want to put a bow on this discussion on school referendums because I think the summary written by your colleagues that did the report on this, I think really summed up kind of the state of things. It's a really complicated mess of things, right? There's a whole bunch of factors into it. But I think the part that really stands out to me is that there is some consequence to this all, right? So if schools aren't adequately funded, you know, there are things in play like the inability to hire or retain staff, or in one district's case in southwestern Wisconsin, talking about dissolving their district entirely. And I find this that when we get to this point in terms of policy, in terms of, you know, where we go with funding things, it you know, we have to understand that, you know, there's decisions that are made, you know, at all levels. But when we get down to it with school funding, that, you know, with so many districts asking funding, I think the conclusion drawn and as it's written on the page here for Wisconsin Policy Forum, that there's a lot of pressure, not just on on voters to help fund schools, but you know, just about everything going on right now in government, not just school districts, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And you know, we've seen both in school districts, but also in local government, cities, villages, towns, counties, they've been dealing with a lot of these same cost pressures that school districts have. Now, they're in a little different situation in that in the last budget, the state did pass a pretty historic increase in shared revenue, which is the state's main form of aid to cities, villages, towns, and counties. And so, you know, a number of them are seeing a significant increase in their state aid, although some are seeing a much bigger increase than others. But, you know, for school districts, I think they're in a little bit of a different spot of saying, you know, we did not see an increase in those revenue limits 2 years ago. We did see somewhat of an increase in the most recent budget, but you know, a lot of them are feeling like they still are not, you know, collecting the revenues that they need to operate in the way that they want to operate. The other piece of these referenda too is that you can kind of divide them into two buckets. Some of them are for operating costs for the district, but then some of them are for capital projects. And, you know, a lot of these school districts have facilities that were built during the baby boom, right, in the 50s and 60s and 70s. To accommodate, you know, the significant increase in school pupils that we saw during that period. But a lot of those facilities now are reaching the point where they either need a large investment to renovate them, or in some cases, there's proposals to replace them. So, you know, that's the other piece of this, is that for some districts, there's pressures for the operating costs. For other districts, there's really a push to have new or renovated schools that are kind of spurring some of these referendum questions.
And of course, you know, the consolidation of schools too, and not necessarily district consolidation, but, you know, just in school buildings. I know Madison, a big part of their ask in this last call, just as an example, was that they needed to, you know, they needed fewer buildings. La Crosse, same thing. They needed fewer buildings because of declining enrollment. And I think that's the part that a lot of legislators will point to if they're maybe not all in on increasing the, you know, per pupil or increasing the funding for public education. They'll point to the enrollment figure and say, well, there's fewer students, so why is there a need for more money? And schools usually counter with things like, well, cost of people and the cost of keeping the lights on is also increased at the same time. So if budgets remain flat or decrease, it's harder to serve that purpose. I'm, you know, just to wrap up a final thought on this, Mark, where do we see, you know, policy-wise things maybe happening in this next cycle that maybe address school referendum funding? Because as we've talked about, it is a very hot topic, not just for people that are involved in education, but I think just about every legislator has at this point heard enough about it that they're researching and dealing with this topic head on themselves.
Yeah, I think, I mean, both things that you just said here a moment ago are correct, in that the broad trend statewide is of declining enrollment. And so it's reasonable for some folks who are a little more skeptical of these referenda to point to that and say that, you know, hey, you know, in many districts, perhaps in the district that the voter is in, there's fewer students. But as you said, also, it's also true that the school district can kind of counter to that and say, well, you know, the cost of just about everything has increased very dramatically over the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, a modest enrollment decline does not necessarily mean that the district's costs just to continue doing what they're doing have declined. In many cases, they have increased. I think, you know, the first debate that's going to need to be had is within the next state budget, which is going to, you know, that debate is going to start to happen early next year. That's for the 2 year, the state budgets go in 2 year cycles. So it'll be for the 2 year starting on July 1st of next year. And that's going to be, I think, a very vigorous debate because, again, you know, traditionally the state has not had a surplus. Traditionally it's the other way around. And the state is, you know, dealing with the deficit. So the fact that there's a large surplus this year is quite historically unusual. And I think schools and many other stakeholders are going to see this as kind of an unusual opportunity to get a funding increase while the state actually has money to do that. But, you know, the state has to balance that against the many other, you know, services that it funds. And the fact that while it has a lot of money in the bank right now, that's one-time money. You know, that's not money that it can count on collecting that much in surplus year after year. That's money that it has in hand at the moment. But you know, the state obviously has to be careful not to overcommit itself beyond the revenues that it could project to take in over the next few years. And when you increase aid to schools, you can't really pull that back without really angering a lot of people. So I think the state will want to be careful to to keep that in mind as well when that debate is being had.
Mark Sommerhauser from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Mark, you've been extremely generous with your time talking about a very complicated subject. I appreciate all of your time and insight on this. Thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Mark. And that'll do it for me. I'm Jimmy Cuska, Civic Media's sports director. Turning it back over now to our producer, Jess P.S. We'll take you through the Dominic Salvia Show, which comes your way next here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody.
From the center, WRCE. Dom Salvia.
Jess P.S., Dom's producer here. Next time, Dom will be back live for all the political talk you missed. No more looking at how the sausage gets made, except for the government. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going
yes.
to get yes. them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.